The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "There will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars, and on the earth nations will be in dismay, perplexed by the roaring of the seas and the waves. People will die of fright in anticipation of what is coming upon the world, for the powers of heaven will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. But when these signs begin to happen, stand erect and raise your heads, because your redemption is close at hand. Beware that your hearts do not become drowsy from carousing and drunkenness and the anxieties of daily life, so that each of you will be caught by surprise like a trap. For that day will assault everyone who lives on the face of the earth. Be vigilant at all times and pray that you may have the strength to escape the tribulations that are imminent, and to stand before the Son of Man." The Gospel of the Lord. Since we begin the season of Advent, I'd like to collect a thought that will fit the journey through Advent as we move toward Christmas to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. So let me pause in these few moments of homily and think with you what this season of Advent might mean. Let me begin this way. Way back when I was young, say in the middle of the last century, I know it's a long time ago. I was born in 1940, so, I mean, I was a war baby, you know. There emerged a movement in theater, a genre of theater not seen before or not seen in the same way, which came to be called the theater of the absurd. The lead persons in this were a number, but two of them are of interest to us. One was Albert Camus, and he won the Nobel Prize for his Myth of Sisyphus. From Greek mythology, you will remember the myth of Sisyphus. He was the one that was punished by the gods, and his life task was to roll a stone up the hill, and it would roll back down again, and he'd roll it up, and it would come down. Absurd. The second person of interest was an Irishman, Samuel Beckett, who lived in France. They both lived in France. Camus was a French Algerian. Beckett was born in Dublin in Ireland, but he lived in France and he wrote in French and in English. And his great work, for which he is remembered, which I became very familiar with when I was young, was written about 1948, 49, in there, and became very popular, especially in Ireland, because he was from Ireland, say in the 50s, when I was a teenager and coming up here. And it's Waiting for Godot. Now, actually, it's playing at the Geffen Theater at the moment over there in the West Side. And Waiting for Godot is a story about these two fellows, Valdemir and Estragon. They're good friends, and they're waiting for Godot, and they're waiting under a tree which is barren, by the way, that's important. They exchange conversations, they bicker, they fight, they exchange conversations, they change hats, and they're waiting for Godot, but they don't know who Godot is, they don't know when he's coming, and they don't know where they're going to meet him. And they go through this one day and he doesn't come, but they know he's going to come. They're told he's going to come. So they come back the next day and they're waiting for Godot. And what Beckett wants us to see is the absurdity of life. And this became the theater of the absurd. Life is ridiculous. Life is foolish. Life makes no sense. Life is futile. Trying to live a good life is meaningless for those who belong to the theater of the absurd. Now, they actually believed in God. They didn't deny God. But they ignored God. And when they ignored God, they ended up in a world of absurdity where achievement and success is all that counts. There's no room for failure. Failure is what makes life absurd. And yet, failure is part of life. If we begin to measure life only by success and achievement, and all the things we collect in life, you'll find life is absurd. It will all fall away. Life is made up of triumph and failure. Consider how this appears in everyday life. You raise your children, they grow up, and you have great dreams and great hopes, and then somewhere out here, you're disappointed. Maybe you're crushed. Maybe you feel rejected, misunderstood, whatever it is. Feel set aside. Did you notice that at Thanksgiving? Maybe. Or you go on a journey and you're very successful. You raise a lot of money. You become very successful, become famous, and then you get sick. And all of a sudden, it doesn't matter. Or you get old and you find out, all of this thing that I spent my life doing is meaningless. It's absurd unless you have the presence of God that teaches you that life is made up of light and darkness, success and failure, the triumph of the cross, the triumph of the cross. So that comes up when we get to Advent. When we get to Advent, we are preparing. Advent comes from advenire, Latin, which means to come toward. You remember, Vene, Vidi, Vici, remember this? Vene, Vidi, Vici, I come, I conquer, I see and I conquer. Words given to Julius Caesar, pre-Christian Julius Caesar. So Advent means we're anticipating, we're preparing. It's a season of kindness. There's something about Advent that brings out the best in us. We become more sensitive to others in need. Maybe we become more aware of the lonely people, the homeless people, the people who come to the giving bank. Maybe we're called to forgive somebody, to overlook human failings, to say, when we fail, it's a teaching moment. It's not a moment of despair. It's not a moment to be dark. It's not a moment to give up. It's a moment called to be reborn. That's Advent. That's the whole preparation we have for the coming of Jesus Christ. And in this season of Advent, we're caught up with all the Christmas shopping and all the gifts you need from Monsignor. I mean, you're out shopping and wondering what he would like, you know. All the cards and the decorations and everything. And sometimes we forget it's Advent. We're preparing for the coming of Jesus Christ into our lives. It's a time of prayer. It's a reflection. I want to give meaning to my life now. It's not measured by how much I have or success, how popular I am. It's measured by a much more profound measure. And it has to do with something in our spirit. It'll call us to be kind, to be sensitive, to forgive. Jesus Christ was born into our humanity. Jesus was born into our humanity to sanctify the human condition, to say to be imperfect, it's okay. Imperfect people are holy people. I think I told you once I went to an AA meeting over here for somebody's second birthday, a fellow I helped in his sobriety. And I went to a meeting and I was absolutely impressed by the humanity of everybody. Nobody had a mask. Nobody was trying to impress another person. Nobody trying to be popular. Nobody trying to be superior. They were all broken people. We are all broken people. That's the meaning of Advent. Jesus Christ comes and sanctifies the meaning of being fully human. So we live out this humanity in the manner in which we take Jesus Christ into our lives as we prepare for Christmas, and we share the gifts the Lord has given to us. What's the greatest gift we can share? Seamus Heaney, in his marvelous little collection of District and Circle, for those of you who know London, District and Circle are two underground train lines, and they meet at a certain station. It's called District and Circle, and he goes down into the underground on one occasion. Seamus Heaney, the great poet, the laureate, comes upon a busker. We don't know what buskers are here. Buskers are very common over there. That's some fellow playing an instrument or something, and he's got his hat here. He's looking for donations. And he stops and he thinks to himself, I could just give some money, drop something in his hand, or else I could stop and listen to him. But I stopped and listened to him. I'd elevate him. I would recognize him. He would feel appreciated if I stopped and listened to him. He would feel affirmed. He would say he has value if I stopped and gave him time. Is that possible? That the greatest gift we have to give anyone in this season of gifting and preparation for Jesus Christ is time? Time to listen, time to belong, time to understand. Time to welcome, time to appreciate, time to affirm, time to say thanks, just time, time to be present. Well, let me tell you two little stories about time. Some years ago, when Mary Ternan was managing our elderly and homebound persons, she sent me to this man in El Sereno. He's an African-American fellow, paraplegic, he's on his wheelchair, played the piano, had a little hat, most cheerful, fabulous guy you ever met in your life. And I went to see Alfred, and of course I'm rushing, I'm on a roll here. I've got to visit all the homebound people. Mary has a big list for me, and I'm running around in circles, so I'm doing, and I get to Alfred, and I say, he's just there playing his piano. He's totally peaceful. I said, Alfred, how come you're so peaceful and I'm stressed out running around like this? And he said, Monsignor, he said, I don't belong to this world. You belong to this world. I said, really? Yes, he said. And that became clear to me sometime later. Mary Ternan had these gifts for each person. And there was a fellow, kind of an odd fellow, living over in El Sereno. He would receive the Eucharist only from Monsignor, nobody else, no Eucharistic ministry, nothing. So I'd go to see him. And we had two sisters, blood sisters, living here on Fremont, elderly ladies, one retired nurse and one a teacher. And they were on my list. So I went to see the two sisters first, and then I went over to see this fellow in El Sereno. And they had gifts. Each one had a gift. The back seat of my car, but I'm rushing, and the gifts got shuffled. So I went in, met the two old ladies. I gave them their gifts, Christmas cards, and said, okay, God bless you. I said a Hail Mary with them, gave them communion, and up on my way. Off to see the fellow in El Sereno. I went and saw him, gave him communion, gave him a blessing. Here's your gift, up and gone. And sometime later, the ladies said to Mary, it's really nice for Monsignor to come by. And they said, we just wondered about the gift he gave us. And I said, really? Yeah. He gave one of the sisters that powder that keeps your dentures tight, which belonged to the fellow in El Sereno. I've no idea what the guy in El Sereno got. He got something that belonged to the old lady. What I didn't give was the greatest gift, time. I didn't sit down and talk. I didn't sit down and listen. I didn't sit and say, tell me your story. Tell me your story. What moments do you have in your life you'd like to share? That's Advent. Advent's a time of telling stories. And in your family, and in your journey through Advent, people want to tell their stories. Everybody needs a place to tell their story. So as we journey through Advent to prepare for the coming of Jesus Christ, be a listening person. Give time so that the other can tell the story. And in that way, Advent will have a meaning. And maybe life too. Maybe life won't be absurd. Maybe reversal. Maybe failure. Maybe some kind of shadow or darkness will have some meaning, because Jesus Christ is among us, and Jesus Christ sanctifies the human condition. I've mentioned Godfrey Diekmann before, this big-time theologian. Died just a few years ago, and when he was elderly, he was asked, Father Godfrey, if you were young again and you could preach, if you could mount a pulpit and preach, what's the first thing you'd say? He'd say, I tell people about deification. And he said, explain that, deification. I tell people how good they are. People don't come to church to find out how bad they are. We all need to know how good we are. How important we are. So important I'll give you time. So important I'll remember you. So important that I will sit and allow you to tell me your story. Everybody has a story. Listen to the story. No judgment. Amen.